I was studying entrepreneurship and business management at university. And to surprise people or not, some people may be shocked, some may not, I had a lot of time on my hands in my final year of university. So I just threw myself into the world of self-help and personal development. Any books, any podcasts, any videos, any YouTube videos I could get my hands on, I was just immersed in that world and learning really just for myself, to be honest. But at the same time, my brother was competing. He's a professional golfer and he was competing on a lot of mini tours over here in Europe. So some will know what used to be the Euro Pro Tour, now kind of taken over by the Clutch Pro Tour in the Middle East as well on the MENA Tour. So he was obviously trying to be his best and find ways to perform at the best level. And I just said to him, I said, look, I'm learning all this information. Let me see if I can help you. Now, it didn't go down too well to begin with because he's an older brother. So you can imagine how that went down when his younger brother was trying to tell him what to do. But ultimately, we started to get some success. He started to play some good golf. And a lot of the players around him who were on paper much better players than him were like, how the hell is this happening? How is Zach, his name is, how is he beating us when his golf swing looks like that? And it's not particularly good. So that kind of then inspired them to get involved because he said, look, I've started to do this work on my mind with my brother. So it kind of built a snowball from there. And I actually set up an organization here in the UK where we were supporting golfers financially, mentally, and physically. So we built a support network, basically. We realized that a lot of players, they only give themselves a couple of years to get to the top level once they turn pro, when in reality, it takes 6 to 8 years. So we wanted to support players across those different pillars to give them more opportunity to stay in the game longer. And as part of that, we brought in various experts to support those different pillars. So I actually reached out to Dr. Rick Sessinghouse. This would have been about 6, 7 years ago now. I reached out to Dr. Rick Sessinghouse on LinkedIn, had seen the work that he had done, obviously, with Colin Morikawa. And I said, look, this is what we do. Here's our mission. I would love for you to come on and host a workshop with me for some of our players. So he did. He came back and responded, and we jumped on a call. And I just did a ton of research on him. We had a great, great conversation. And I think he saw a lot of his younger self in me, ultimately. So we started to build a business relationship. And then, long story short, I stepped away from that company back in 2021. And Rick basically grabbed me and said, I need you to come and help me build Flowcode. We haven't launched it to public yet. I need you to come and help me build Flowcode. So I've now obviously been learning under Rick. He's been mentoring me for the last 6 years or so, which has been an incredible journey, one I'm very, very grateful for. And I've just established myself in this industry more and more as time goes on. So where Flowcode sits now, we work with, well, we've certified just shy of 300 golf coaches worldwide. We work with just shy of 200 golf academies, national teams, high school teams, all around the world as well, to help them integrate mental game coaching into their academies. And that's kind of the main focus of what we do, on top of obviously the in-person events that we host all around the world as well.
I find it fascinating because you're focusing, you got it, your start with your brother, professional golf, but for the overwhelming majority of us, we all play golf, but we're not professionals. But we still probably encounter a lot of the things that you work with for professionals. How does that kind of change how you speak to golfers, just knowing that there's this elite level, this very small group like your brother, and then there's all the rest of us, and there's this massive 30 million, 35 million golfers. How does that change your work with Flowcode and with, I guess, your own practice?
No, I think that's a great question. And it's one, it's a pushback we get on a regular basis from people like, oh, isn't this just for the pros? Isn't this just for the pros? And I kind of have two answers to that. Number one is we, of course, believe that performance is state dependent. Okay. Performance is state dependent. Now, the question I ask any golfer, regardless of who you are, is do you want to hit better golf shots and shoot lower scores? Now, every single person listening to this, if you're listening to this podcast, my assumption is you want to hit better golf shots and shoot lower scores, right? Not the opposite. If we want to achieve that, yes, of course, we need to work on our golf swing. And most people are doing a pretty good job of going to the range, going to simulators, getting a golf coach, working on their golf swing. Club face tells the ball where to go, physics doesn't lie. So keep working on your golf swing. But the question I ask is, regardless of how good you are, have you experienced the time where you've been stood on the driving range before a round of golf and everything feels great? You're striping it, right? You feel calm, you feel collected, your tempo feels good. And then you take that 3 minute walk to the first tee box, and all of a sudden something changes. And you stand on that tee box and you snap hook it, you hit it 30 yards right, or you top it off the first tee box. Now, that's happened no matter what level of golfer you are. We work with some of the best golfers in the world, some of the best elite junior golfers. We work, of course, with the standard golfer, the club member as well. Everyone has experienced that at some time. Now, the message that we want to share is that that wasn't, you didn't forget how to swing a golf club, right? What changed in that period of time was your state, your mental, emotional, and physical state shifted. And what I mean by that is your heart rate increased, your grip pressure became tight, and your tempo got fast. And when those things happen, Walter, you're no longer producing the same golf swing, right? Now, none of us are immune from those things, from that state change, from the heart rate increasing, the grip pressure getting tight, the tempo getting fast. The best players in the world experience it. So if we agree with that, we have to learn to manage our state, no matter what level of golfer we are. Because if we learn to manage our state, we can access our best golf swing on a more regular basis. Even if it's not Rory McIlroy's golf swing or Colin Morikawa's golf swing, it's your best golf swing. And if you can access your best golf swing on a more regular basis, you will hit better golf shots and shoot lower scores. So if your goal is to shoot lower scores, we need to manage our state because performance is state dependent. But the other key thing I'll say as well here, Walter, that a lot of people forget is that learning is state dependent. So if you're at the beginning of your journey and you want to develop, you want to lower your handicap, you've just picked up a golf club for the first time. My guess is that at times, even in a golf lesson or on the range by yourself, you have moments of anxiety. You feel the social pressure, people watching. You feel frustrated when you can't quite get it. If you're in a frustrated, anxious, nervous state, you are not absorbing the information at the same rate as if you were focused or calm. So learning how to shift your state when you are anxious, when you are frustrated, even in a learning environment, is so important. Because if we can learn in that focused and calm state, that present state, we will accelerate our development so much quicker. So that would be kind of my two messages is, yep, state, performance is state dependent. So if we want to perform better, we need to learn how to manage our state. But equally, learning is state dependent. So therefore, everyone should learn how to manage their state. So that's kind of my response, I guess, to that question.
So then the next question is then if it's about managing our state, I'm assuming you have the answer. This is part of the protocol. Are there tools or drills or sort of strategies for us to be able to manage our state? And then do you have specific strategies to manage your state while you're under duress? Say you're going through a round and things aren't going well.
Absolutely, absolutely not. I'll share a few of you in a second, but to begin, I want to give kind of an analogy of why this is important in the first place. Okay, so for the listeners, bear with us and go on a bit of a visual journey with us for a moment. So I want you to imagine that you are second shot into a par four. Okay, let's imagine you're in the fairway. I know we might not all be in the fairway. I'm definitely not on a regular basis, but for this story, let's imagine we are. We're middle of the fairway. We're 150 yards to the flag. We have water short and we have water long of the green. Let's imagine for a moment we turn to our golf bag and we realize that all we have in our golf bag is our putter. How would that make you feel, Walter, in that moment?
Certainly distressed.
Distressed, right? Maybe a bit anxious, confused, nervous. Now let's imagine the exact same scenario. 150 to the flag, water short, water long. But this time, you turn to your golf bag and you've got that perfect club from 150. Whatever it is for you, whether it's a 9 iron, an 8 iron, a 7 iron, a 6 iron, doesn't matter. But it's the perfect club for you from 150. And you pull that club out your bag. How does that now make you feel?
My state has shifted. Now I have more confidence.
Absolutely. You still might think it's a challenging shot, which it is, but you're more prepared, more confident, more calm, you're ready, right? Well, the interesting thing is that the challenge itself didn't change, right? It was still 150 to the flag, water short, water long. The only thing that changed was the tools that you had in your toolkit, the golf clubs in your golf bag to overcome the challenge that's in front of you. Now, a lot of people are probably wondering, well, how does this connect to the mental game, right? Well, at Flowcode, we believe that most people go out onto the golf course, they face a mental challenge of some kind. Some anxiety shows up, some pressure, some nerves, their heart rate increases, the equivalent of the 150 shot. They turn to their mental golf bag and it's empty. There's nothing in their mental golf bag. Or at best, they have one mental golf club, which is take a deep breath. Everyone's heard take a deep breath, right? But that's one golf club. Golf is miserable enough with a full set of golf clubs, let alone one golf club, right? So our goal at Flowcode is to fill up your mental golf bag with as many mental golf clubs as possible. So when you experience some anxiety or some nerves, you turn to your mental golf bag and you say, that's no problem. That's that breathwork golf club. That's that visualization golf club. That's that body scan golf club. And you can pull that mental golf club out and use it in those moments to navigate those stresses, those anxieties. So that's the goal we want to help everyone achieve. Because when you get to that place where you no longer fear being anxious, you no longer fear being nervous, because you know you can do something about it. So you actually embrace those challenges. You don't try to avoid them. And that's really what we focus on. So I'll give you very quickly just the four main ways that you can shift your state. And these go into many, many different facets, but there are four main ways. The first way we can shift our state is through any of our human senses. So we call this sensory flow. Okay, so we can use sight, hearing, we can use smell even, touch, taste, we can use our breath, we can use our body in any way in order to shift our state in any given moment. Okay. The second way you can shift your state is through your mindset. We call this cognitive flow. And there are really two main things that we kind of place under cognitive flow. The first is self-talk, how we talk to ourselves, a huge one that I know most people do a terrible job of. And the second one is recall, recalling past experiences, great past shots that we've hit, incredibly, incredibly powerful. The third way is through our environment. Our environment can shift our state, both positively and negatively. I'm in a very different state if I'm on the golf course versus at the shopping mall with my girlfriend. And I'll let the listeners decide which one is fear and which one is flow. You can make your decision yourself. And then the fourth and final way you can shift your state is through your social surroundings, right? The people that you're with. We all know people that put us into flow. We all know people that put us into fear, right? The important message, though, on those four, there are two that we can control, and there are two that we can't control. Environment and social, it's not always in our hands. But our human senses and our mindset are always, always in our control. No one can take those from us. So I really want people to hone in on those two. How can I use my human senses? How can I use my mindset to shift my state? And I'll give, if we've got time, I'll give a couple of examples specifically so the listeners can take those away and implement them even today if they're heading out onto the golf course. Okay. So the most simple, I'll give two sensory and then I'll give a couple of examples on the cognitive as well. So the first one on the sensory side is breath work. Using our breath is one of the simplest but most powerful ways to shift state. The simple technique we encourage everyone to implement is one we call slow breaths. Okay. So, with a slow breath, what we do is we inhale through our nose, fully expanding through our belly, not through our chest, through our belly. And then we exhale through what we call pursed lips. So, we imagine we have like a cocktail straw between our lips. We make the gap as narrow as possible and we exhale as slowly as we possibly can, as gently and slowly as we possibly can. Now, there's a really useful feedback tool called a hand. So we can place our hand in front of our face when we do this exercise so we can get feedback on how fast our exhalation is. Because if, and people listening, as long as you're not driving, but if people are listening, and just put your hand up in front of your face right this second, about 6 inches from your face, maybe a bit more, and just exhale fast onto your hand. You'll feel the air very strong onto your hand. Now, instead, when you exhale this time, use the pursed lips technique, imagining you have a small cocktail straw between your lips, and exhale so slowly and gently that you can just about feel the air hitting your hand. Just about feel it really delicately, like a feather hitting your hand. And maintain that exhalation for as long as you possibly can. And then repeat with an inhale through the nose, expanding through the belly. And then again, the long, soft exhale. Really simple, but incredibly powerful. The longer we extend that exhale, the deeper the sense of calm and relaxation. So that's the first one in terms of sensory, using our breath. The second one, and it's an interesting one, we saw a great example of this. For those of you that watched the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, Colin Morikawa took the win. And you will have seen that on his final shot, he had about 25, 30-minute wait. I think Jacob Bridgman was having some troubles up front. And a lot of players in that moment would have been in the past. I think Colin just made bogey up the last. Or in the future, oh, if I can just, get this ball up near the green and chip it on and make the putt, I'm going to win the tournament. Future focused or past focused. But Colin decided not to do that. He was focused in the present moment. The cameras caught him walking over to the edge of the cliff and looking out with expanded awareness across the ocean. Now, I understand he was at Pebble Beach. We don't all have that privilege. But he was looking out with expanded awareness across that ocean. Now, a technique that we recommend players use, using their eyes to shift their state in any moment. And we call it soft focus with expanded awareness. So for this technique, what you can do is you pick a point in the distance. So I'm looking out my window and I've got a specific tree in the distance. You relax your eyes on that tree, almost to the point where you're squinting. Your vision becomes a bit blurry, but you're focused on that single point, that tree. And then gradually, without moving your eyes, you become aware 180 degrees around you. You aren't moving your eyes are still on that point, but you can see 180 degrees around you. And as you do that technique, you send a message to your brain that everything is okay. By keeping our eyes still, relaxing our eyes, and implementing expanded awareness, we send a message to our brain that everything is okay. So it's a really powerful way to use your eyes to shift your state. Your eyes are so important. If we dart our eyes around, we activate the sympathetic nervous system. We start to get prepared for fight or flight. We literally send a message to our brain saying there's danger, right? We're looking, moving our eyes, looking for danger. Is there a lion behind that bush? I'm looking around, worried, right? But if we keep our eyes still, we activate the parasympathetic nervous system. We tell our brain everything is good, everything is okay. So that's another technique, sensory technique we can use to shift our state. The final one, Walter, then the cognitive. The one thing, the one task I'll recommend for every single listener is to keep a great shot book. We spoke about past great shots, right? Past experiences, recalling them into the present moment. I'm sure if I ask most listeners, give me a list of all the bad shots you've hit recently. The list would be huge, right? Be a huge list. But when I ask, give me a list of all the great shots you've hit, it's a much shorter list. It's just how we are as human beings. We remember the negative, right? My encouragement for every single person, get a notebook or use your phone notes, write out every single club in your bag. And under every club in your bag, list as many great shots as you possibly can. Not just great 6 iron into the fairway. Give as much detail. What did it look like? What did it feel like? What did it sound like? Activate all of the senses that you experienced in that moment to make the recall even more clear in your mind. So when you get into a moment when you've got a 6 iron in your hand, you've got just as much probability, hopefully more, of recalling a great shot as you have a poor shot. That's incredibly powerful and important to shift your state as well. So they're just three practical things people can do immediately to shift their state in any moment and help them perform.
That's such a great, I guess, thought and practice to follow. I know I've done that in the past where I've kind of kept a list of my great shots, try to keep that going, but I've never done it by club in the back, which I think is great because then it forces you to remember. And then I would assume then the byproduct is you're able to kind of look at that and then bring in the good thoughts versus the, like you said, remembering the negative.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the test I always give people is like, even if I ask you now, Walter, could you tell me a great shot you hit with a 9-iron recently? Yeah. Could you tell
Yes,
me a
yes.
great shot you hit with a 5-iron recently?
A little bit
Okay,
harder, but
fantastic.
yes. Yes.
So if you can tell me a great shot you've hit with every club in your bag without hesitation, you're in a really strong place. But if there's a club in your bag that you can't tell me a great shot that you've hit without hesitation, when you stand over a ball with that club in your hand, how can we expect a great shot to come into our mind, right? Because we don't have time to sit there and think about it and reflect and go into deep. It's got to be there. We've got to be able to access that great shot immediately. So if you can't answer that without hesitation with every single club in your bag, I would recommend building that great shot book to the point where you can respond to that question without hesitation with every single club in your bag. It will be a really powerful thing.
So I want to finish up with two questions, and these are both based on what you've already taught us today, which has been wonderful. My first thought is you mentioned self-talk as part of the cognitive flow, and it is shocking. And I know for myself, I've always been very aware, at least the last 20 years, about my own self-talk in life. But when I get on the golf course, it kind of goes back to this negative self-talk, and I say things I would never say to myself in real life. Why is it that this is it just the environment that triggers this negative self-talk that I did maybe 40 years ago? What I don't understand. Why does it come back?
Yeah, I think honestly it's because we get very emotional on the golf course, right? We become very reactive. We react emotionally rather than responding rationally, right? So we always talk about a post-shot routine at Flow Code. And it's a really important part of the whole process because everyone has a pre-shot routine, or most people do, but no one thinks about what happens after the shot. We hit the shot and normally we react emotionally. So our recommendation with the post-shot routine, or the reason for a post-shot routine, is that we need to create a gap between the stimulus and our response to the stimulus. Now, what I mean by that stimulus is the shot itself and then our response to the shot. If we hit the shot and we react immediately, that's always going to be emotional, okay? That part of our brain is very fast. It reacts immediately, the emotional part of our brain. So instead, what we want to try and do is create space, create a gap between the stimulus and the response. So there are so many things you can do, but one of the most simple but powerful, and it's still very difficult, even though it's simple, is watch the entire shot to completion. So you hit the shot, and whether it's gone 40 yards left into someone's backyard or flush down the middle of the fairway, watch the entire shot to completion until you can no longer see the golf ball. And just by doing that, you create space, a gap between the stimulus and your response to it. And as you create that space, you're so much more likely to respond rationally rather than reacting emotionally. And the negative self-talk is more often than not the quick reactive emotion. If we can just create space, we're still not going to say, great shot, Walter, that went in someone's backyard, right? I'm not expecting you to be delusional. But you might just say, huh, that wasn't what I intended. I wonder why it went there. Now, that's a lot better self-talk. That's curious self-talk rather than the critical, you suck, Walter. Why did you do that again? Etc. Right? So that would be my recommendation. And that's why most people don't have that post-shot routine. They hit the shot, they react immediately. If you can hit shot, have a gap, then respond rationally, the self-talk will improve.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes. Yeah. I'm excited I'm taking a lot of notes here because there's a lot of things I can apply. That brings me to my last question then. It seems as though, from my perspective as an amateur golfer who's loved the game and struggled with the game for over 30 years now, it seems like I've built up this sort of this I guess group bundle of mental scar tissue that I've had over the years, right? I've had these experiences. I've had a problem with the shanks now on and off for 10 years. I work with my pro, he helps me. And then I go into the environment and it kind of triggers, just like you said, and I bring back things emotionally. What is it about golf, or maybe it's just the experience, or maybe it's just like you said, the environment's changing. But it seems like I have so much more mental scar tissue from past trauma where I overthink everything. Whereas when I was younger, in playing golf, I guess it was less of that. I mean, is that unique to the game, or is that just part of life?
I think honestly, it's probably magnified in the game of golf. But we all know when we're kids, we're so much more playful, creative. We're doing it for the joy of the game, and there's less social constructs as well, right? We're not thinking about judging others or other people judging us. And then as we get older and more aware of the big wide world, we start to apply more pressure. We start to be less playful, less creative. We don't have an awe mindset anywhere near as much, right? We're less mesmerized by things. So we lose a lot of these natural flow triggers that we talk about. So that's what we encourage every single player to do is to go out there and be more childlike, be more playful, be more creative, be in an environment where you can be in awe. You hit a great golf shot and be mesmerized by it, like actually soak it in and be amazed by it. So we teach these seven flow mindsets, and I'll give you a few of them. But I'd recommend a player go out and intentionally try to apply these mindsets. Like pick one per hole, for example. So the first one is awe mindset. So the next time you go on the golf course, how can I be in awe as much as possible on this hole, right? If I hit a great shot, let me actually be mesmerized by the fact that I've just hit a golf ball over 200 yards off this tiny club face and it's gone in a dead straight line within a 20-yard radius. Wow, that is incredible. When we look around in between shots and we see a beautiful view of nature, be mesmerized by that view, right? And then the second hole, the next mindset, apply a playful mindset. You know what? I'm not just going to hit my stock driver on this shot. I'm going to get out a 3-wood and I'm going to turn this 3-wood from that tree to there and I'm going to try and finish. Be playful, be creative when you're out there and apply that to the second hole. The third hole, then, gratitude mindset. How can we be grateful for being out here on the golf course? So, if you just applied those three mindsets, picked one per hole, it's going to take you back to when you were a junior, take you back to that natural mindset we usually apply. I think that's really, really important to do because we lose it. We lose it as we get older. We get too focused on social constructs and we lose this natural flow mindset that we had when we were younger, when we were junior golfers.
So, Hallam, I'm taking all this in. I'm loving everything you're saying, especially for myself. I know it applies. Is there any way I can get involved in Floco? Do you have products or ways that I can implement this and you can help me implement it? What's that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we provide one-on-one coaching solutions. We provide a very kind of innovative one-on-one coaching solution for any level of golfer, in all honesty, that wants to get better. And our one-on-one coaching is covered across three pillars, basically. So the first pillar of our one-on-one coaching is the online one-on-one sessions, right? They're done through Zoom. But the difference that we bring is that they would be both, yes, conversational at times, but also very practical. So we have golfers on the range, we have them on the putting green, we have them out on the golf course, and we're working with them in live training capacities because we're big believers that we have to train our mind the same way we train our physical fitness or our golf swing, right? The joke I always make with people, Walter, is that I can't read a book or listen to podcasts or have a conversation with someone about getting bigger biceps and then wake up tomorrow and have bigger biceps, right? I have to get my ass in the gym. I have to pick up the dumbbell and I have to do the bicep curls. Not once, not twice, but repeatedly over a long period of time. And only then will my biceps start to grow. So we make our training one-on-one practical in the environment you're going to apply it. And we do that through those online one-on-one sessions. The second part then is that we provide people with a gym for the mind, a place you can go every single day to truly train your mind in between the one-on-one sessions. So the same way we go to the gym and we do our workout, you can go to a digital gym for the mind, where we provide daily live coaching in a group format. We provide a daily exercise for you to complete, like a meditation or a visualization or a breath work. So you're truly doing those bicep curls in between the one-on-one sessions. And then the final piece of or final pillar of our one-on-one coaching is technology. Every single one-on-one client of ours gets a Focus Calm headband, which is an EEG headband that measures brainwave activity in real time. So we use that headband in the one-on-one sessions. So even if you're thousands of miles away from me in the UK, I can see you on the range and I can see your state live. I can see if you're focused and calm, or I can see if you're active, lots of cognitive processing and overthinking, nervous, anxious. And we can start to do games, challenges, and drills to teach you how to go from active to focus calm whilst getting that tangible data and feedback in real time. So that technology is a huge part of it as well, because it helps us make the mental game tangible. It makes it measurable. It makes it trainable, but it also makes it enjoyable. We can create competitions and games, and we've got a scoring mechanism for your state as much as we've got for your golf game. Okay. So that's kind of how our one-on-one coaching works across those three pillars. We're very much orientated around true training, but that's the best way for any golfer to really interact with us. And kind of learn more about how Flowcode can help them.